Now I lay me down to sleep, I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. For how many of us was that the first prayer we were asked to memorize? Or did you rewrite it for your children as I did for my daughter? Now I lay me down to sleep, I pray the Lord my soul to keep. Jesus, watch me through the night and wake me with the morning light. The earliest prayers we learn are often based on promise and petition. The promise that God watches over us. Or the promise that when life is up, we might rest in God's care eternally. Or if you choose to rewrite the prayer, you end up with a promise that each new day will begin by God watching us the night before and waking us to it. Prayer is meant to mature and grow with us beyond the childlike safety nets that we place before our children as they go to sleep with that inner dread of not waking to mommy and daddy in the morning, which is actually what goes on in early child psychology. Prayer can mold us and it can make us into something more. It influences how we perceive life, what we hold as possible for life, how we begin to forgive, and how we begin to receive forgiveness. It allows us a medium by which we watch our lives with God and turn them back to God for guidance. Think for a moment, or feel for a moment. Why are you here today? What draws you to this sacred space and to this sacred meal? Perhaps it's just a habit. If you're young, perhaps it's something that's instructed into your life. But I doubt it's just those things. Among your answers might well be that you have some sense of a need for prayer. The desire to open to God and be opened by God, particularly as the scriptures open in your life. Some notion that others praying with you or beside you or you in their company will give you an energy in your own life of prayer. There may be some need to be aided in looking in and looking out as you sort your life and your hope as you move to the future. Or you might have some seemably trivial inner cure that's needed, some disappointment of the week past, some loss that you're carrying with you. Or maybe it's not so trivial. Maybe there's some deeper concern or corrective in your life. Perhaps you have a chamber that desires to be forgiven, a place to be visited within, either a forgiveness that you need or a forgiveness that another needs from your hands. Or perhaps there is some generosity in you that needs to come into this space and express itself openly to God. There is an energy released by gathered prayer that can center us, can draw us together as a people. It can also be a place that forms a nourishing pool inside us that may feed our more private prayers, a center that we grow by when worship is well offered, that helps us to grow and walk away nourished in our lives. Such are the dynamics of prayer. How deeply do you know this place? Jesus seemed to know it terribly well, but then he is that blend of God and man that we can't quite pull the mystery fully together about. In our reading from St. Luke's Gospel, we have the first element of a two-part teaching on prayer. And its context is very important. On the one hand, Jesus has just been teaching his disciples about a day when God will come in full power to deliver them from their oppression. It will be a day of final reversals, when the rich and the poor, the powerful and the powerless, the oppressor and the oppressed will change places. You may well remember that parable of the rich man and Lazarus and who ends up in the bosom of Abraham, the bosom of God. There's a clear warning here to Jesus' followers. Be careful, lest you yourself becomes the victims of the reversal by some insensitivity to what God values in the way of generosity and fairness and justice. So as followers perceive this kind of waiting mode on God's action, they are, after all, a community under persecution. They are under Roman rule. And there is a chance that they may lose heart if they cannot see this connection to God. The other context of this gospel is that the entirety of the gospel was written in a period when the early church was also waiting the consummation of God's reign, even as we today are still waiting for the full and final revelation of God. And they too were a community somewhat under persecution, largely economic, since they were pushed out of the norm of society. And thus, today's parable assumes that Jesus' hearers have been taught to pray, "Thy kingdom come," and then to wait on it, to be shaped by that waiting toward the kingdom, to live as if the kingdom was to come the next day. This notion of waiting and expectant waiting is perhaps hard for us to grasp in this age of instant everything. You know, you have that cell phone, and you just pop it open wherever you are, and suddenly you're connected. Or if you are headed home and you haven't thought about dinner, just whip in to TJ Maxx or some grocery store, and you can find a frozen dinner. That wouldn't be TJ Maxx, would it? But you know, one of those places. Or into one of those instant hamburger places where within 5 minutes you're fully satisfied and you're burping your way home. Or if you happen to want to know something, you just go to that phone that's smarter than you are and you Google and you find this information and you feel like you've got more information than you can handle, and somehow you are smart. You're plugged in. And you've lost something. We've lost the gift of plugging away in monotony, that gift of reflective living where we have to stop and really look deep to get an understanding. That's the way we live today. Today's gospel, Jesus is teaching the value and the need for persistence if we are to grow into the people that God dreams that we can be and longs for us to be, and develop a relationship between our nature and the divine nature. In the gospel, Jesus is teaching his disciples that they need to pray and not lose heart. He's concerned that we remember the way of relationship to God is by prayer, that inner-outer conversation where we open ourselves up to the presence of God regularly, maybe even in a very monotonous fashion that plugs away day in and day out. He knows that when life is hard, we often think it is unguided by God's care. How do you heal this lack of trust, of hope, of faith? When you think about Jesus, it's often important to remember that he would pass many a night in prayer. The scriptures often have him going off alone and returning with the morning light. And so he tells the tale of what's called the importunate widow, or the persistent widow. He tells it so that we will understand the nature of prayer and of God as contrasted to human nature left alone. The widow is emblematic of the most vulnerable level of society, those who are without power, without social or economic station, or us when we feel lost or alone or somehow confused by what's happening in our lives. She perceives herself as wronged, and she wants justice. The King James Version puts it rather strongly: avenge myself against mine enemy. And she's passionate in her plea. She's fully engaged in getting what seems right for her. The judge, on the other hand, he's at best impartial, uninvolved, even indifferent. He's called unjust. But her passion wears him down. And he grants her her justice at last. Not because it is of his nature to grant the justice, but because it is of her nature to be doggedly persistent in what she wants. And then Jesus takes us to the point of the lesson. And the Lord said, listen to what the unjust judge says. And will not God grant justice to his chosen ones who cry to him both day and night? Will he delay long in helping them? I tell you, he will quickly grant them justice. For Luke, God is not like the unjust judge. God listens for us. On the one hand, God is already here, present in Jesus Christ, seeking to set things right and instruct our hearts. On the other hand, the efforts of God are incomplete in any given moment. The world runs by an energy not rooted in God and seeking God's will. In this world, God responds. And yet, the timing of the response we do not set, and often we do not understand its coming. Jesus finishes this first reflection on prayer with this line: yet when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on earth? Will he find anything that runs in contrast to the world left on its own, which has lost prayer, the art of reflectively seeking the will of God? And also, perhaps, has lost us as passionately working for what is right, what is just, prayerfully seeking that God may bring change inside our lives. Here is the key. God's justice, view of what is right, held in prayer, will change us. We see it in Jesus. He begins his ministry by what? The act of baptism, and then 40 days of wrestling in the wilderness with what's called the devil. But if you read that gospel deeply, it sounds very much like any one of us struggling with our own ego. And will we do that which is right with God, or will we do what we want to do on our own alone? And he comes to terms with vocation. And then at the end of his life, there he is in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he's wrestling. Let this cup pass from me, he prays. And then follows, but not my will, thy will be done. And there's so much we don't see in between those two episodes, when he must have wrestled with the difference of his own will and the will of the God who stands at the heart of life. Prayer is not so much getting what I want as it is learning how what I want squares with what God wants. It's not so much a friendly neighborhood chat that we might have on some gentle path, some gentle review of our life, as it is an honest and deep opening up of our lives to be influenced by the reality and depth of God. The real question of prayer Jesus leaves us with is the petitioner, you or me, being hammered through long nights and days of prayer, a life of often reflection, into a vessel that can hold God's will, that can listen for it, and can act on it in our daily lives? Are we becoming a person of faith that can shoulder God's call and be more responsible in the environment where we find ourselves with others? Are we about asking, seeking, knocking, waiting, and changing? One black minister who was active in the civil rights period once said, "Until you have stood for years knocking at a locked door, knuckles bleeding, you do not really know what prayer is." And we know by the very description of the man who quotes it that he's part of a culture that had to knock long and hard to find their just place in society. And Jesus says time and time again, "I have come not to call the righteous, but sinners." Why? Because the very title sinner implies an awareness of a need to change and grow and become more what God would have us be. It is, in a strange way, the most honorable title we can have on our lives. The very call implies that we are the ones who will be changed by prayer, by relationship to God, that this is what will make us more whole in the world, more fit for God's hope. This is faith. You may have come in with something in particular that you wish to pray about today, something that's weighing on your heart or your mind, or you may not. Either way, I can give you something to pray about as we go through this day. Pray about your giving to the support of God's work in the world and the portion that you give to support that work of the world here at St. Paul's. Wrestle with the notion that it's to be significant, a measured gift, one that you will notice as an act of faith and gratitude that will help you measure your days. And struggle with this as a way of letting go of yourself as the center of your life, and come to terms with yourself and God, and grow the generous core of who you are. And then pledge the gift, so that your word brings you to discipline and reflection and hope for the prospering of God's work and God's will, both in your life and in the life of this community where we find ourselves seeking God, and perhaps even beyond, in the world where you can generously give something back to make the world a more solid place for those who may need that solidness. This is but one way at persistence in prayer, and the way it becomes a just action in our lives. Know those places where you need God, and go there, doggedly like the widow, and find what God holds out to you. Amen.